All right. Bon Appetit Foodcast. I'm Adam Rappaport. This week, we have on Amy Morris and Anna Polonsky, who run MP Shift, which is a concept design and branding studio focusing on restaurants. And at some point, I realized like so many of the cool graphic elements that restaurants do that I see on Instagram and whatnot, or if I'm at a place and I'm loving the way the menu looks, I realized that Anna and Amy designed them. In fact, just this past year, they won James Beard Award for Outstanding Restaurant Design for De Maria, a restaurant here in Manhattan. So anyways, yeah, what do they do? Well, they specialize in everything from marketing to graphic design to overall visual identity for a restaurant. And so I talked to them about how they do what they do and how they sort of turn restaurant owners' imaginations into reality when it comes to everything from the layout of a space to the graphics on the menus to matchbooks, you name it. So, fascinating talk. I'm into this one, and let's do this. Okay, so Amy, we're talking about your jumpsuit.
Oh, they told you you'd catch us off guard. I knew it. Yeah, I love jumpsuits right now. They're so easy, comfortable. And it's fun to do something a little different with them than what's expected.
So. And this one is from, you got it in Brooklyn at?
At the General Store in Dumbo. Those guys are excellent. They're great curators.
And it's vintage?
Yeah, vintage.
But it's like a nice sort of like Crayola blue.
Yeah, it's that Parisian blue that you
Parisian,
see.
Yeah, it's kind of like, well, we have like a Emil on our staff, Emil Stonic. He looks like a Parisian street sweeper most days here in the office. He has like this little blue-on-blue suit made out of sort of a denim-y, canvas-y sort of material.
Right.
But then that also reminds me of that project you guys did in Paris, Echo, correct?
Yeah.
Which has those very sort of primary color vibes going on.
I love
on.
The segue.
Yeah.
Good well, segue. This is all, I've been planning it out since last night. Well, all right, so I'm just going to dive in. We'll hit on a lot of subjects. All right, so you designed a cafe in Paris, which was named after Echo Park in LA. I read this on your website. And then if you look at the site, by the way, the site is called, just thempshift.com. And you can see all these things we're talking about as we talk about them. I think that'd be pretty cool for the listener. And you kind of got away from a few years ago, everything was kind of pink and mint and this and that. And you went with this very blue, yellow, red sort of color story.
Well, we didn't design the interiors.
No, but the logo and all that sort of stuff.
Anna, you want to talk about the color?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny how we've been associated with pink and mint because of one space. So I think it's, just to introduce a little bit the company, what's really unique to the MP Shift is that we don't want to have a signature style. So most famous designers in New York, you can recognize their style immediately, and sometimes it's great style. But we really see ourselves as a creative agency, not as artists. So we're here to translate the client's visions.
I love the fact that you guys get pissed off about color palettes. You're like, we are not the pink company. I know you're doing pink.
Exactly.
We did one place that had pink.
Yeah, good way to start the podcast, Adam. Start us with the pink.
Well. I wanted to get you guys going.
So De Maria was done, with Kumail Becerra. It was a collaboration. It really meant to talk about California and travels and healthy and that's what that color palette was, with a lot of pastels and muted. Yeah. Echo's very different. It's a guy. He's obsessed with LA. He loves the street art from LA. He loves those bold colors. He also likes the 80s. So, the yellow was part of it. So every palette's different for every client. And we're never going to use the same decor as we did for De Maria for another concept that was really specific to De Maria.
So just for the record, I was talking about more just kind of out there in the design sphere, how that color palette was kind of a thing. But so you guys, which is interesting, so I feel like we can, it's funny doing a podcast about graphic design and stuff where you can't, the listener can't necessarily see what we're talking about. But I do feel like you guys have a distinct style, but it seems like you adapt that sort of style and philosophy to your clients' sort of interests and needs.
We have a touch.
Ooh, I like that.
It's very important to us to articulate the client's vision. So we always start with a brand Q&A and get to know the client. We also start with a visual Q&A.
Do you do this like at an all-day cafe or do you go to a bar and have drinks?
We'll do it wherever it's good for the client. Like, uh-huh. We try to meet them where it's best because we do work with clients all around the world. So a lot of times this happens over email and phone calls. We always start with the client and getting to know them well, and then we try to articulate that vision the best possible way for that client. And our touch that you are referring to is we like a bit of imperfections in our mm-hmm. designs. We want them to feel like a space that you're familiar with. And that doesn't come with a space that's over-designed and feels like a set.
Well, all right, so it's interesting. There's so much to talk about. I feel like you immediately went to space where I was actually thinking of your graphics. And there's two very distinctly different components of what you guys do from your, you know, let's for the listener, just like menus, matchbooks, cards, et cetera, logo. And then you've got the space itself, which is three-dimensional.
The interior.
And it's interesting with your graphics. You mentioned that imperfection, like a lot of them, they do feel a little off kilter. There's a little sort of like leaning this way or that way, or some wiggles or tilts to them or whatnot. But I also think they're very, I don't know if bold is the right word, but they're very graphic and like there's not too much going on. But what there is going on, you get it right away.
Absolutely. Yes, it's very important to us that we deliver creative that is some of the best you're seeing out there, and we really push our team. Anna and I creative direct every space and every graphics that you see on our site if you're following along, and we're always pushing it. And it's interesting, I was listening to a podcast recently about creativity and how I often find that our team will come to Anna and I with a design, whether it's interiors or graphics, and they're so nervous in the beginning that it's not 100%. They haven't knocked it out of the park. And Anna and I are always telling them, don't worry about that. We have a starting point and we're going to get there through this process.
That always seems the most like, what's that, like that seed that feels potent and exciting, and then you can sort of hone it and craft it as you go.
But I think what keeps it clean and bold and graphic, whether it's graphics or interiors, is that we ask our team to work with the positioning in mind. So it's the third thing we do is brand positioning and brand strategy.
I don't even know what that means.
So we never just start working on the logo on interiors by just putting together a mood board. That's the second step. The first step is really like a marketing agency sitting down and thinking, okay, what is the project? And with the Q&A, it's interesting because we'll find that different owners have different way to talk about their concepts. So we try to put our finger on this.
How do you do that? Because certain people are very good at clearly expressing what it is they want and what it is they feel. Certain people are not good at that. So what do you do when you meet a client who's not a great communicator? How do you extract it from him or her?
I mean, it's most clients, to be honest. A lot of chefs are not great communicators. Yeah. They're cooking.
That's their way
of expressing themselves. So, you know, I think Tilda, now called Otway, is a good example. They are located on St. James in Clinton Hill. And so they were just going to call it St. James. And as we get closer to the design work, one of the answers to the Q&A we realized was we don't want anyone to think it's a religious place. So we're like, okay, well then we might want to change the name. That's going to impact the branding as well. We also found that the three owners or participants had different words to describe it. One would say it's a cafe, one would say it's a restaurant, one would say it's a coffee shop. Wow. So by noticing those inconsistencies, it's a way for us to make sure they get on the same page.
Yeah.
And then we help them create a mission statement and values and so on and so forth. So when the creative team starts working, they have a very clear positioning laid out in front of them. And so I think that's why at the end of the day, the creative is quite meaningful. It's imperfect, but it's never just the result of a design fantasy, or it's never designy. It really has a purpose and it serves a message.
You know what the mission is. I mean, it's funny, when our former creative director, Alex Grossman, who you guys know, when he was here, and it's that thing of language and visuals and how the two don't always connect. And, you know, he always use this example, which I agree with 100%. He says, like, oh, when someone says they want it to be modern, like, modern can mean 20 different things to 20 different people.
Absolutely.
If you don't actually have some tear sheets, some visual samples that people can latch on to, like, oh, no, that's what I mean. You're like, okay, like,
so
you're talking
important.
Like 1930s modern as compared to 1980s modern or whatever. And it's so different. And it seems like you really have to sort of get on page with your clients before you're like, all right, we're ready to move ahead, I imagine.
And that's the second part of the Q&A. There is a list of questions, but we also ask them to put together a mood board with five photos, because as you say, people will say it's colorful. For some people, it means one pop of yellow in a black and white photo.
Yeah.
For other people, it's a lot of color. So we do that work as well.
I guess, you know, there's a concept of, all right, you've got your mood board, you have your references, you choose a color palette. I get the leap to designing a menu and a matchbox. I love that restaurants still have matches, those that do. But designing a three-dimensional functional space that has to operate, that you're dealing with lighting and acoustics and traffic flow and comfort and vibe and all that, that seems like a giant leap from being graphic designers. And my guess, at what point did you guys think, hey, we can do this, and how has that journey been to designing actual functioning restaurant spaces?
Well, Anna and I both have a background in strategy, graphics, and interiors, or designing sets or interiors. So we've been doing all that MP Shift does for a long time throughout our careers.
But had you ever designed a restaurant?
Never a restaurant.
Okay.
Interiors of homes, and also sets and events, which is all very similar the way you think about it. And what's interesting is that we try to take the aspect of designing a home. When we go to a restaurant, we think more like we think when we're designing a home, because we want the space to feel that comfort level. And also, we don't want the space to feel cold like a sea of two tops. We want you to have different areas to sit, much like in your own home. That brings people back. It's a good business decision as well, because it leaves a lot of opportunities. Say, I sat in the banquette last time. I'm really looking forward to sitting down in that corner. Or I want to have a little party, and they have this great area where you can have a big table. We think about that. That's one of the first things we do, is work on the floor plan and try to make the space feel like you can walk through it much like you walk through a home. And then we also think about areas that you can privatize. So how can you find an area that could be privatized while still leaving the restaurant open? Because I know I get really upset every time I go to a restaurant and it's closed for a private event.
Yes. So you see it on their Instagram.
And some don't even put it on, and then you're...
But it's interesting you mentioned the home comparison, because as a homeowner, there's that leap from designing, decorating whatever your home, to actually living in it for a while and understanding how it functions. And how often have you had to sort of go back to a restaurant and make adjustments or sort of revisions based on now that it's up and running?
I mean, the first couple of weeks we'll make a few adjustments, but you know, at that point it's really the owner's decision, and we step out and it's their home. And so if they feel like they should add a piece of art, or if they feel like they need an extra shelf, you know, he should go for it.
But what about functionality? You're designing a space on a computer with no one in it. It's very different when all of a sudden it's full and they're doing 140 covers a night.
But I think we have a real vision where we can see that space come to life from the floor plan. We love doing floor plans. I mean, we really... The architects sometimes like doing it, but we really like to have the first go of setting the space and creating different areas. We do not want you to walk into a space and only have a two-top as an option. We want a communal table. We want a banquette. We want maybe a little quiet area, a privatized area. We think about all of that in
romper room for the kids.
Well, yeah, if you got kids.
I would love that. If you could just have a place where I could just throw my kids in the corner while I have like two glasses of wine and eat and drink.
Actually, we have a place in Houston opening that
Oh, really?
Would be perfect for that.
Maybe I'll go to Houston. Haven't been.
I don't think it's such a chillip. I think it's actually our strength that we don't have traditional academic backgrounds in design, because we put a lot of common sense in it. And it's really how we work. As Amy said, whenever we design a restaurant, we think, okay, would we do that in our house? Would we have this crazy ceiling installation with ridiculous lights, you know, that these big restaurants do? We wouldn't do this. Would we retile the entire wall just because a little piece of tile is missing? No, we would find a solution, you know? And that's what creates a charming house. And it's the same for layouts. You don't really need to study to understand the flow. It's like, okay, sometimes you just want to go for a bite, but you don't dare taking a table because you're not going to have a full meal. Well, then create an area for this.
It's interesting you mentioned not being like schooled in that sense of having gone to architecture school. And there's, some parallels between chefs who, you know, spent 3 years at CIA compared to chefs who just kind of learned on their own from working here and there, and having a more sort of free-flowing personal style, as opposed to, no, this is how you make a hollandaise sauce.
It's interesting. We had an intern one summer who was from architecture school, and we had a project in London we were working on, and we were designing the facade, and we gave her some ideas of how we wanted that facade to look, and we were really trying to push the boundaries, and she kept coming back to us and saying that you can't do that with architecture. You cannot do that design.
And you're like, what do you mean?
You can do that design. We know enough to know it can happen, but with architecture school, she had all these boundaries she was working within that she didn't feel like she could leave those boundaries. And that's what Anna is saying, is that this has been a real advantage for us, because we don't see those boundaries. We only see opportunity.
Well, how did that resolve itself? Did you like convince
we were
her.
Able to design the facade we wanted to design. The client was really happy with it. We gave them many options, as we always do. And I think that intern has come back to us and said, wow, I kind of wish I could stop going to my architecture degree and join you guys now, because she felt like that was very enlightening and more creative and more inspiring. And that's why our designs reflect that as well.
And I think that's what helps us as well, not having a signature style, because we're totally open-minded with every single project. We don't have one way to do things. We always rethink it from scratch, so...
All right, so who does what?
Everyone asks that. That's
yeah.
funny.
Well, we both do everything.
All right,
so.
Amanda, I'm going to put you on the spot again. What is Amy better at than you?
That is not nice. Yeah.
You can answer this anyway.
No, thanks.
It could be like, she wears better jumpsuits than I do.
And it has great jumpsuits as well.
I think I've learned a lot. I mean, Amy has worked in strategy for decades. She's been a real... passionate about interiors, so she has incredible inspirations. I think Amy's put a lot of incredible processes in the company that really makes us more efficient, and that's a big thing for us. Again, we're really a creative agency. We don't want to just be cute creative. You know, we want to be efficient for the clients.
Well, I was going to say, it is good to note that Anna's Parisian and I'm from the U.S. and, there's a 15-year age difference. And we met about over 10 years ago, and we've been really good friends and then started this business. But what was interesting is that we both have this similar drive to not do things as they've always been done. And that's quite unique, because I think a lot of people are afraid to do something differently, to be judged or be told that that's the wrong way to do it. And that, I think, has allowed us to be very symbiotic. We're always pushing the boundaries, always looking for a more efficient process or more creative way. So we're very much on the same page, and I feel like I learn from Anna every day.
Did you say what she does better than you?
She does everything better.
Oh, stop.
No, she's definitely she's just a star at everything she does. So I mean, it's been the best partner I could possibly have for this project.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
All right, let's talk about your most recent project, Tacocina.
Yes, that was a lot of fun.
Square Hospitality Group, Danny Meyer's group. So here, it's fair to say, prior to this, a lot of your clients have been smaller, independent-owned restaurants kind of doing their thing. This is working with a very big restaurant company.
First Brooklyn project.
Yeah, so talk us through this process. How did they approach you? What did they say to you? What was the relationship like?
Well, we have a great relationship with them. I mean, one thing I do want to say about that project, because we haven't been able to say it publicly yet, and it was such a great moment when we presented the creative for that. We presented probably 6 logos or 8 logos to Danny Meyer, and his comment was, I feel like I'm at a restaurant where I want everything on the menu.
That's good.
That was pretty incredible.
So wait,
that felt
before
good.
We get back, explain, Anna, explain what Tacocina is to the listener.
Yeah, so Tacocina is a taco concept from Danny Meyer. It's his first taco concept. The chef used to be the sous chef at Union Square Cafe. She's Mexican, but they're not pretending to be authentically Mexican. It's kind of a New York take on this. And what's incredible beyond the food is the venue. So they're on the waterfront on the East River in Williamsburg. It's a new public park. It's the best view we've ever seen, probably in New York. And we didn't really realize that when we first talked with them. They were just like, you know, let's work together. It's our first project in Brooklyn. We want it to be a little younger and cooler than what we're used to doing. We feel like you guys would be perfect for this. And then we understood that we were going to design this huge sign on the waterfront that's pretty much, I mean, it's like the Pepsi sign, pretty much.
I mean, so. It's like a couple of stories high.
Yeah. So that made the project even more fun for us. But they've been incredible clients. I think it shows how, I mean, they have such experience and they're so professional and they totally understood our process. And not everyone does, you know, we're very clear. We have four rounds. Every round is very specific. We have this Q&A. They've been amazing in understanding that.
But it was interesting. You said this taco concept. You didn't say restaurant. So when you say, why did you say concept?
It's a kiosk on the water.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's also how Shake Shack started, as a
kiosk
in Madison Park.
Exactly.
But when you designed this and got into business with them, were you thinking, okay, this could be the first of several tacocinas? And then did that fact that this could roll out to more, did that affect how you did the logo and design, that it could be repeatable?
Yeah, I mean, we always think about that, especially when the brief is we want to be cool and young in Brooklyn.
Which, again, could mean any 20 different things.
Yeah, and we had to deal with that with Samisa as well. Sussman Brothers shawarma concept. They're in Williamsburg. They were our first graphics project, I believe. And they're authentically Brooklyn. You know, Max was at Roberta's. Eli was at My Land. When we think about Brooklyn and cool, we want to make it Brooklyn and cool, but we also always think, okay, what's beyond that? What if it grows? What if the shawarma concept is in airports some days?
Exactly.
Do you go neon pink? Maybe not. Maybe you have more varieties and options to use it. So.
And so for Tacocina, give me, what is the backstory in terms of how the logo came about, how the color palette came about? Because again, it's very, you see it and you get it immediately.
Yeah, so we always start with a creative direction. So this creative direction was
Baja meets Futurismo.
Okay, explain.
So it's really important from the brand positioning that now we know the client, but we want to present them with two creative directions that relate to that positioning. So this was one. I don't remember the second creative direction, but they chose that creative direction. So that really influences the colors when you think of Baja. So we start looking at images of Baja, and then we look at old taco shacks, and we do our research. And then from that, we narrow it down. And we always offer the client a couple of color palettes. This one was quite a bold color palette. And knowing Union Square Hospitality Group, we also offered them alternatives that weren't so bold. But they were with us all the way on this. They loved the creativity.
And so I hate to tell you, but there are some like kind of pinks and greens going on here.
It's balanced. It's not just neon pink. Well, actually, I mean, that palette specifically was inspired by Joseph Albrecht's book on Mexico.
Okay, sure.
Which happened by chance to be one of Danny Meyer's favorite painters and books, so it worked out. And again, you know, the creative direction has a purpose. Baja was talking about freshness and this seaside vibe in Mexico, and then Futurismo, one of the founders of the movement, spent a lot of time in New York City, so it's talking about New York and Brooklyn and this sort of rebellious movement. So
I'm gonna pry, is there any sort of contract, like if they open another one in, say, Washington DC, do you have first dibs on designing that one, or no? But it'd be fun if you did.
It would be great.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the way we work with clients, they really enjoy it. So they naturally come back to work with us again. And we've already started working with Danny on other projects.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Do you care to share?
I don't think we can.
All right. So in terms of, like, again, like what's interesting, you mentioned design versus architecture and who does what. Like, for instance, do you guys – I'm at that age now where – if I go to a restaurant and the acoustics are bad, it drives me freaking crazy. And there's a certain all-day cafe that I like, but it's just so loud and cacophonous. And I like a buzzy restaurant, but like just hard noise bouncing off the floors and the tables and the ceilings. Do you get into that? Is that your responsibility at all?
It isn't, but we do try to have some influence in that because we as well don't like that. I mean, your experience is everything. Yeah, exactly. And it's the whole experience when you sit down. You want to have a conversation with the people you're with and you want to enjoy the food. And if you can't hear them, it is a problem. So we do, when we're designing a space, we do talk about what are the acoustics and where might there be issues and how can we help resolve that with the art, or could they install things in the ceiling?
But that can get expensive, right?
It can. Yeah. So not everyone wants to invest in that.
All right, what's your track record of staying on budget?
We're always stay on budget.
Really?
Yeah.
And on time. I mean, we've never been late.
How?
On
how do you?
Any
how do you? Who, so who's? How? Who? Who among you or someone else makes sure like the job gets done when it's supposed to get done in the budget? Do you have a project manager type, or do you one of you do that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a mix of having the right team. So we were just talking about Julie, who was with us at the James Beard Award. She was our first employee. She now helps us really manage the whole creative team. And so, for instance, Amy and I do a lot of the biz dev. We're never going to sign a quote if she doesn't confirm we can actually do this on time. And then Grace heads the graphics department. Same, she makes sure we can commit to the right timeline. And we send that timeline to the client so they know what to expect. And you know, sometimes we know we can deliver before September and they know it. But if it's fine for them, we'll make it happen. And then we have a lot of processes, as I was saying. Each round, you know, specifically includes X, Y, Z. We never over-deliver on the first round to make sure the client stays focused and on track. So it's very process-oriented, I think, incredibly so for a creative agency.
What about, what's the difference between operationally working on a project, say, Lower East Side or in Brooklyn compared to working on a project in Paris or London?
It's funny, we were just talking about that, and we were talking about how seamlessly we've been able to work with clients in Paris and London.
I can barely even work with people in my own office. Can I sit like 10
we
people
can help
down?
You with that.
Yeah, I'm pleased to.
We'll sit down after this. But yeah, it's been really seamless because we have so many processes. It's surprising. I think creative people think you'll come, or people who think about creative people think you'll come into their office and it will be a mess and there'll be images everywhere. But for us, we feel the more organized you are, the more room you have for the creative process.
I like that. You set up a template, some scaffolding, and that allows you. At BA, when we launched those two verticals last year, Healthy-ish and Basically, and it sounds like a similar process to what you did. We had this design team at Condé Nast, this woman, Brooke Ellis, used to run, and they came in and they were very clear, like, here's the schedule. It's a 9-week schedule. This week we're going to do this. Let's talk about the concept. Then let's talk color palette. Then we'll talk fonts. And it was such a, it's so different from the way I work. I'm kind of like, we talked about this before, I'm kind of neat, but I'm not as sort of structured as I should be.
Right.
And it was interesting having that structure then allowed you to sort of think a little bit more freely because you knew the structure was going to be there to support the thought.
Absolutely. We just took another step to organize the company, and already I'm finding it's allowing me to think more creatively. I feel more relaxed and more focused on the creative aspect of the projects as opposed to having to manage that.
Who's your messiest employee?
They're all pretty good. I mean, we have a pretty tough application process for HR. And so once you make it to the table, chances are you're pretty organized and professional.
Like, does someone always, like, leave their, like, winter coat on the back of their chair? Or does, like, everyone hang them
I mean,
up?
That's acceptable. We want a little,
nice chairs. You don't want coats hanging out everywhere.
We want personality. We want everyone to bring their own idiosyncrasies to the table. We celebrate that.
How much we're going to get to the lightning round shortly here. But how much is lighting your responsibility compared to someone who's brought in to specialize, especially on lighting?
We do the decorative lighting. We like to big spaces, especially if it's a big brand that goes beyond just a eating venue. We like to have a professional lighting designer working with us on the spotlights. But lighting is very important. And I think people always ask us, how do you take an all-day cafe from day to night? And really, it's simple as lighting and styling.
And alcohol.
It's funny you say that because I find it very interesting that bars sometimes will cover the alcohol. So one of our clients has an all-day cafe. He's opening for dinner tonight. And I noticed he's pulling a shade over the alcohol and menu. I don't know if he has alcohol, but he has a menu and he's pulling a shade over it. And I saw another bar pull a shade over the alcohol. I have no problem looking at alcohol while I'm having breakfast.
Also, well, it's nice because it's so
part of the design.
Booze bottles are so pretty.
Exactly. They add a touch.
Yeah.
But that's what I mean. I feel like there are some sort of preconceived ideas on design and architecture, and people will tell you, you cannot have less than X two tops. You have to cover the alcohol. A bar cannot only have two steps for bottle. You should have a whole wall with bottles. Yeah. You know. And I think because we have no preconceived ideas, we can change that and disrupt that.
Well, it's so funny. And then when someone does something different, everyone notices.
Yeah. Exactly.
Same for colors. You can't mix, you know, blue and black. Or yeah. It's just hilarious.
A lot of people don't want to use black, but we're seeing a trend where black is being mixed with lighter colors, and we're seeing more.
Seen that. It's interesting. Don't you see that, like, at Atla, do they have that black wall?
That's true. They do. And the black icon, too, of the girl.
Yeah.
And then we're working on a bar in Paris, a mezcal bar in Paris, and we're doing an upstairs.
Mezcal comes to Paris. Wow.
That's right. Here we go. And we're doing a black upstairs. It's all black and navy. And
that's pretty cool. Oh, I had one random question. You had designed that salad concept in Flatiron, Verde. Which is really cool. What does it feel like when one of your projects closes or for whatever reason? And then restaurant business, I have no idea why or whatever, but restaurant business is incredibly hard, and rent and everything.
Yeah.
But to have spent that much time and actually physical labor, and also just, you know, beautiful stones or marble or tiling and all that goes into a space, and then it's like, oh, we got to close.
It's very sad. I mean, that project closed because of personal reasons, and the owners were moving back to Mexico. But that was hard to see because it was so quick.
We did know the people who took over there, and we negotiated a few things.
What does that mean? You negotiated what? Did you take some things out?
So for Verde, well, first of all, yes. Second of all, we did this beautiful counter for Verde.
Yeah, so explain the counter.
Four different slabs of marble, creating a certain pattern that we then use into the branding. We used the leftover marble in the floor and the facade. I mean, that counter meant a lot to us. So instead of having the new tenant destroy it, we asked them to just cover it with wood, which they did.
Really?
You
couldn't take that whole counter out, could you?
No, we couldn't. Yeah. But it's not so much a possessive thing. It's just like, that's a beautiful piece, and we understand it's not on brand with this new tenant, but it might work for the next concept.
What's in there now?
Maman, the French bakery. Yeah, sure. And they're killing it there, and they're awesome people. But yeah, we begged them not to destroy the counter,
and they
did
it. It's a very personal expression of the client and yourselves, and then all of a sudden these other people move in.
Yeah.
But the good news is that Gonzalo went down to Mexico City to open an agave bar. So more news on that Labor Day.
Yeah,
it should be around that time frame.
All right, we are going to hit you up with some lightning round questions. I think you both could answer them, right? Either one. All right. And they're all sort of, you know, kind of restaurant sort of minded. So you guys ready?
We think so.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about dinner. Bar or banquet?
Bar.
Bar. And banquet I like, but if there's a round banquet with one single chair, nothing bothers me more than that.
Wait, explain that to me again.
You know when you're at a banquet and it's all banquet, but there's a chair there's one single chair that's not banquet? Who wants to be in that chair?
No, you mean like more of a booth, so like a horseshoe booth, and then someone sits at the end. That's always a little awkward, right?
It is. No one, stop doing those. People should stop that. No one wants to be in that chair.
It's a scandal.
Futura or Helvetica?
Futura.
Depends.
Depends on what?
Well, it's hard. It depends on the positioning.
What does positioning mean?
Well, I feel like Helvetica has something cleaner and more modern. Futura is really elegant and more high-end.
You get to pick one. Which one's it going to be?
All right. I'll go for Helvetica just to show we have a variety.
Stem or stemless?
That's interesting. Stemless.
What does it mean?
The wine glass.
Oh,
stem.
Yeah.
Well, she's French.
I knew her answer.
Another big debate with my husband and him. Actually, I bought some with stem this weekend because I couldn't take it anymore.
I can't do stems at home. It feels too formal. It feels too dining out for me. And I know that back in the day, you would never even think of drinking that. That's what a wine glass was. But I like to either do more juice glasses at home or those more bigger,
I'm glad
formal
you've come out on this
ones.
Publicly. No stems at home.
I think a lot of people do what you do, but I just like the ritual. I don't think it changes the taste or anything, but I just like the ritual of having a beautiful wine, a beautiful glass, and the ceremony of it.
We'll let you get away with that one. plants or flowers?
Plants.
I mean, again, context is important.
This is lightning round. You don't get context.
All right, plants then.
Well, they last longer.
I think with flowers are beautiful in a restaurant. They make such a huge difference, but they are expensive. I don't think people realize how expensive and time-consuming having fresh-cut flowers in your restaurant
You need throughout a professional, too.
Well, yeah. That's what I'm saying. And then you're paying that professional, and then that professional is paying a lot for the flowers, and then they're changing them out every few days.
But you need the pros for the plants, too, because I see too many restaurateurs put in plants, and then they don't water them, and they die. And that makes the restaurant look terrible when the plants are dying.
You should come to my office. I have that fig tree in my office, which is – that's the second one. I think there's something about the ventilation from the floor and the sunlight, and they – It's like a Bermuda Triangle for fig trees.
Fig trees should be quite easy. Put in a little light and water, you should be fine. We'll have to go have a look at that.
Okay, we're going to go old school here. La Grande Ouie, or what was the Four Seasons and is now the Grill?
What's the first one? Oh, La Grenouille.
La Grenouille. Say it again for us. That's such a Parisian cab driver to think. You say the name of the street four times to the cab driver, and he's like, what? What? No. Yeah. You're like, that's what I was saying, wasn't it?
La Grenouille. I would go with La Grenouille.
The pool.
The pool. Yeah. The pool, not the grill.
Or the grill.
The grill, okay.
The grill, yeah.
I would say La Grenouille. Both are like historic, by far the best lighting of any restaurant in America.
Yeah.
I think we did a piece on them one time that Brett Martin wrote, and I think we reported that we could figure out there were 752 light bulbs in the place, from tiny little ones. Wow. They have like table lamps, wall sconces, sort of recessed strip lighting. Like that whole restaurant you walk in just glows.
Clap on, clap off.
And they also do amazing fresh flowers there.
No expense spared.
Steak or frites?
Frite.
I'll go with steak.
What's your favorite kind of steak?
I don't know the English words. Ribeye, I guess, is always great.
Yeah. Correct answer. votive or candlestick?
Candlestick.
Yeah.
Wow, classic.
Yeah.
They do. They have those at Le Coucou, don't they? Do proper candlesticks?
Yeah.
Which is kind of a rarity.
Yeah,
in New York City.
Don't see it.
It's just. I mean, the votive could be nice, but it's become such a it's too IKEA at this point. I feel like everyone's using the same glass ones. And
exactly. I will say, what's nice about a votive, they still add a nice glow, and they're so easy. You buy a box and you just throw them on the table. If you're just doing a friend quick dinner party or whatever.
No, they're great. I just think they could be more creative. Add a little hint of color.
You know what? You run a design firm, so
just disrupt the votive.
Maybe you can get creative with them.
We were just in Oaxaca not too long ago, and one of the things we were there looking for were candlesticks.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Cool. MoMA or Whitney?
Oh, Whitney, hands down.
Really?
It's always been one of my favorites.
I would go with MoMA.
I like that you guys disagree.
See, that's why we're partners.
Yeah.
Yin and
yang.
Well, this is a good one. Good restaurant one, I think. Tile or wallpaper?
I would go with tile.
I feel like you guys have done more tile.
Well, just for maintenance purposes. But we would love to do more wallpaper. It's just hard to convince restaurateurs to do it. But
I'm going to go wallpaper. I mean, we don't do a lot of wallpaper, but I just think the amount of tile you should have on walls is you need to be careful.
Yeah, we've been,
is an issue.
That's interesting. Nationally, we've been seeing a lot more wallpaper, fun wallpaper, which is kind of cool. Or at least like on one accent wall or in the bathroom or something. It's really nice.
Yeah, you can design your own wallpaper, which is always fun too.
Yeah. Okay. Great.
That's what we'll tell our clients in New York. Nationally, it's been very popular.
Didn't you hear the podcast?
Exactly.
Says Adam Rappaport
to the Foodcast. Great lighting or great natural light?
A great natural light is ideal.
Yeah, I mean, that's the dream.
If
to have
you can
big
get it.
Windows.
Yes. A couple more. Because you guys are all good at this, both personally and your brand. Insta stories or flat Instagram? Traditional Instagram.
I love a story.
The thing is, stories are easy. You can just quickly snap one. And where with the feed, you really need to think about what you're going to say, who you're going to tag, although I do that less and less thinking about it. But one thing I do want to make a point on Instagram is that we never design for Instagram.
Oh, you're saying never design the restaurant. So where is that whole thing?
It's never part of our design thought. It's really important to us that we stay focused on the vision and on the client. And if it's done well, it will be Instagrammed, which means photographed.
So, but that also comes back to the natural light or great lighting thing. If you have great natural light, it's a lot easier to Instagram from
a
restaurant.
Exactly, yeah.
What's your Instagram handle for MP Shift?
The MP Shift.
And
THEMP Shift.
Wait, who handles most of the posting?
Well, we have a pretty good staff. Uh-huh. So we have people on our staff take turns figuring out a theme. So our Instagram is quite unique. I don't know anyone else who does it the way we do, but we have a mini zine. So every week is a different topic, and then we have 7 posts on that topic. So we have different people in the team pick the topic, and then Anna and I review the topic and the words and the photos.
Yeah. I was going to say, I like your Instagram a lot because obviously you keep way for people to keep up on what you guys are into up to professionally, but there's also, it feels educational. Like you're doing your Geoponte one for a while,
and
you'd see interiors, you'd see some graphics, and it's a fun thing to follow. It's just graphically pleasing, but it's also the captions are informational. You're like, oh, that's interesting. Didn't know that.
Cool.
So, okay, last question, which we always do, butter or olive oil?
Olive oil.
Better.
Thank you. If the French girl didn't say butter, you know.
I have to say, I've been cooking a lot the basically perfect scrambled egg, and I was thrilled to see butter.
Oh, yes. You have to.
What you recommend.
I love olive oil with fried eggs, but you cannot make scrambled eggs with butter. With olive oil. Amy and Anna, thank you so much.
Thanks for having us. We really enjoyed it.
The Bon Appetit Foodcast is produced by Carrie Polis and Christina Che and produced and edited by Emma Wortsman. Our theme music is by Nathaniel Wortsman. We have new episodes every Wednesday, and if you want to tell us about this or any other episode, email us at bonappetitfoodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.